This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from the beautiful hill country of Texas. And coming back from a little bit of a hiatus, or what we call operational pause, strategic pause. We had a lot of work to do, but I also took a little vacation, did a cross-country trip with my sister, got the flu, busy 3 weeks, not COVID, got a COVID test, not COVID, and did a lot of writing and working on a new book, had an article come out. So it's been a busy couple of weeks, and the world has gone through a lot of changes, a lot of drama. I wanted my first show back in the saddle to be, where do we go from here? But that'll be the next show. And but because there was an opportunity to interview someone I greatly admire, G. Moody, host of This, That, and the Third, also hosts on Instagram every evening at 11 p.m. Eastern, G. Moody's Cookout. He had a great podcast clip he put up yesterday, and I said, I got to get G. Moody on the show. He said, I'm available now, so we did the show today. You are going to love G. Moody. G. Moody is, I think, one of the most creative and honest podcasters, broadcasters in America. It's going to be a big good. He's going to be a big deal because he is a pioneer. There's nothing like his show in the world, and I love hip-hop music, and his use of music is amazing. Even if that's not your genre, it's just so, it's masterful. And he's a great host as well, courageous and honest. So we're going to talk to G. Moody. And the reason I wanted to have him on is because we are being divided as a country. Family members, friends, and we're arguing over things we don't even know much about. And it's really nonsense. And who benefits? Who benefits from all of this chaos, all of this anger, all of this infighting? It would be one thing if they were dividing America between the Hatfields and the McCoys, but it's not. The Hatfields are fighting amongst themselves on Facebook. Members of the McCoy family are ganging up with members of the Hatfield family to dox and destroy strangers. This is unbelievable. And so G. Moody, to me, is sort of like a signpost of the future. Just someone who, as he says, he loves the place that he lives. He's honest. He respects other people's opinions. He is fearless in expressing his. So I thought he'd be a great guest to have on today. And then our next show is going to be on where do we go from here? Because I honestly have never been more hopeful, because my hope is not in men or polls or worldly power. So I have, by God's grace, never been more hopeful. I want to get on with the interview. This episode, as always, is being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project. Now, the mission of the Vulnerable People Project is to stand in solidarity with the vulnerable. And we stand in solidarity with the vulnerable. We're pretty good at it. We punch way above our weight, from the child in the womb to the Uyghur in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan. We played, I believe, a very big role and the State Department's recent naming of China, their discovery that China is, in fact, committing crimes against humanity, against the Uyghur, and they are also committing genocide. This is a sorrowful thing. It's a sorrowful determination. Our organization has been the vanguard of standing with them. And our mission is to stand with the people. Facebook, Twitter, Google, you know, the NBA, they're not. If Facebook, Twitter, and Google and the NBA are on their side, no one needs us anyways, right? We stand with the folks that the world is not going to cheer, the forgotten. And so when you become a monthly donor by going to thegreatcampaign.org, when you become a monthly donor, you too are standing in solidarity with the vulnerable. For any gift of $20 or more a month, you get my book with John Zmirek, The Race to Save Our Century, where we lay out our plan to create a culture of life, love, and freedom. This episode is also being brought to you by MyPillow, and I have been using MyPillow now, guys, for over a month. I love the pillow. I lost the pillow. I had to order new pillows. People kept stealing my pillows. Now I got new pillows, and I love it. And I don't even use pillows. I should say I didn't, because they always hurt my neck. But now with my pillow, I sleep better than ever. I also have the Giza Dream sheets, because I'm fancy like that. And those sheets are amazing. I love the sheets. My children steal the sheets. They climb in bed, not because they love us. They want the Giza Dream sheets. I have a neighbor's cat that comes into my house, runs straight to my bed, and curls up in the Giza Dream sheets. I'm not making that up. Could I make that up? That's a true story. And my favorite is the mattress topper. Now, the mattress topper is versatile. If you have a big family like I do, your kids are going to take that mattress topper, pull it off your bed, drag it into the family room, and they're going to lay on it. They're going to play chess on it. They're going to play My Battleship on it. They're going to watch movies on it. And it's going to be like the center of your living room. I promise you, I promise you, you've got to get the mattress topper. It is the best. It's made in the USA. You can wash the pillows. If you want to know why you need to wash your pillows, you got to listen to the end of the show. I say things you can't believe are on a podcast. You're not going to believe it, right? So they won't go flat, and you can get a queen-size premium MyPillow regularly $69.98 for only $29.98. That's a savings of $40. Kings are only $5 more. I have a big head. I don't even know why you would not get the king. You got to get the king. If you have a head like me, I have a 7 3/8 hat size. It's embarrassing, but it is true. All right, guys, now is the time. Not only are you getting the lowest price ever, but you have a 30-day guarantee. So go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio's Listener Square, and there you will find all these amazing deals and deep discounts. All right, now, if you're an old-timer, you just want to call. The number is 800-876-0708. Again, that's 800-876-0708. Use the promo code Jones. If you don't use the promo code Jones, I don't get any credit. If I don't get any credit, the producer yells at me. He's like, those bizarre, you should read the script, Jones. You go off on these tangents talking about toothpaste on the pillow and why you need to wash your pillow more often. And you're not selling this. So you got to use the code. They're going to make me use the script, all right? So here we go with the one, the only, a hero in New York City from This, That, and the Third in G. Moody's Cookout, Gerald Moody, on the Jason Jones Show. G. Moody, welcome to the Jason Jones Show.
Yo, what's up, bro? What's happening?
Not much. I'm always intimidated because you're my favorite podcaster. So when I have you on the show, I get a little nervous.
Nah, man.
Because you're the pro. You are the pro.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that.
I need to learn how to use you. I mean, you definitely have the best music of any podcast in the world.
Yo, I pick the gym, and it goes well sometimes with the topics, and it just adds the ambiance to it.
It's perfect. So you have kind of moved away from podcasting. You're not podcasting as much, and you're doing these cookouts on Instagram. I don't know if you're doing it on other platforms as well, on social media. You want to talk about that a little bit before we jump into what I really want to talk about?
Yeah, what I do every night, you know, Monday through Friday, 11 p.m. to 12 a.m., is I go live on my Instagram. I call it G. Moody's Cookout, and just talk to people, you know, the fans or whatever from around the country, around the world. And I just go live off the top, nothing prepared. I do it outside in the streets of New York. I'm in Harlem every night. And we talk about what's going on, sports and American life. And we just go. And it's been going well. You know, only people, certain people are invited. So they come every night. And usually I'm in the streets in Harlem, but I could be anywhere. I did it on the Brooklyn Bridge. I did it on the corner And it's good, man. You know, so it's just, you know, talking about what's going on in American society and just having fun. And 1 hour, no preparation. I don't stop talking for 1 hour and boom, it's every night. And I'm compiling that to make a video of that. So every week will be a compilation of what was done Monday through Friday. And it's good. It's really coming together. So I'm about to launch that on my own platform.
All right, I can't. I'm glad you're doing your own platform. Now, the reason I wanted to have you on, I wanted to have you on again for a long time, but I always, you know, I shouldn't say this to my audience, but I don't know. I don't even know what my podcast is about. I know the goal of my podcast, which is to advance the interests of the vulnerable, from the child in the womb to the Uyghurs. But we talk about everything, and then I try to slip that in there. So, right. And I get all these emails. People go, I like when you go ADD and go on these crazy tangents. But that's what my show is about. But the podcasts I listen to are boxing podcasts, MMA podcasts, and your podcast. And what I love about your podcast, you call it New York Style Podcasting, is it's right. It is not about politics. It's about the things politics are for. A beautiful, rich, happy, joyful, vibrant community. And you, when I listen to your podcast, the way I love Hawaii, you love New York, and you bring your neighborhood and your family and your friends and the owners of the local bodega. I didn't even know what that was until I started listening. My wife's in New York. I'm like, what's that? She's like, you don't know what that is? You know, that's what your podcast is about. But then yesterday, I always check, right? So I checked you, and you had a show up, and you had a former KGB, and you hadn't put a show up in a while. And it was just a clip with great music interspersed of a former KGB officer telling Americans what's about to happen to them. When was that clip from?
It was from Yuri Bezmenov, former KGB agent. He defected to Canada. He's since passed away. And he was basically telling the interviewer what it was like and what strategies that he's done in India, being, you know, down with the KGB. So he was telling them, this is how it happened, telling the interview, this is how it happened. And you could see it. It's legitimate. It's overt. It's right in your face, but you just don't understand what you're actually seeing. And he was explaining it, and he was like, it's America. This is in 1984. He said, this will happen to America if they don't shun Marxism, Leninism, if they don't shun it and exist, this will slowly take over American society. And he's been right. It's been very, very true.
After the show, I'm going to put your link, G, to that episode in the show notes. I want everyone to listen to it. It's horrifying. You would think we're being played, that it was recorded like last week.
And, right.
You know, but it was recorded in 1984. And you and I were the kids he was talking about in 1984, right? We were the young men in school, young boys in school that were being lied to, being propagandized, being taught to hate our country and to hate freedom. And but here's why I wanted to talk to you. When I found you, you were on a podcast before with a guy I did a movie with. And so I checked out his show to see what it was about. And I fell in love with the show, but I fell in love with you. I was like, this guy needs to have his own podcast. And then you eventually left. And I sensed, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it because he's your friend. That's a sort of sorrowful thing, the way politics is ruining the important things, like friendship and family. That's why I just got rid of Facebook. I don't need politics. My friends are allowed to disagree with me. I don't need to be arguing with people I love every day, all day, about nonsense.
I mean, I politics could never break up anything for me because I respect all opinions. You know, I expect all discourse. So we could have a conversation and you could think differently than I do. And I respect that. And then we could go watch a football game because, you know, it's politics. You have your way of seeing it and I have mine. And if it suits me, then it suits me. If it suits you, it suits you. And that's fine. When you go off the rail and you start dictating what another person should think as if I have unauthorized thoughts, then I'm not the problem. The other party is the problem because they don't understand or respect a differing opinion. And that's the problem. It all boils down to respect. That's what it is.
Yeah, I'm not saying I haven't had arguments with my friends that are to the right of me about things. And right. And maybe I have. I don't remember of ever losing a friendship or things getting heated. But it seems like the left, they're the ones that say they're so open-minded and diverse. No one is more passionate about anything in the world than I am about abortion, period, ever, never, because of something that happened to me. But yet, I have all sorts of friends I love and don't think twice about their opinion on that issue. And it seems like on the left, they don't even care too much about these issues. But if you disagree with them one iota on anything, it's a big deal.
Yeah. They claim the tolerance, but it's obvious they're not tolerant of anything but their view. They just want the group think. That's it. That's how it rolls. That's modern liberalism. Everyone thinks the same, and if not, then you get thrown away. So I could never be a part of that. So, I just stay on my lane, independent, no matter what anyone thinks. At least it's my thought. I came up with it. I saw the situation. I analyzed it, and I told you what I thought. Nobody, told me how to think or whatever. So I stand on that conviction, and I feel good about it.
So that was it. So you just needed to be free to express yourself, and that's why you moved on to your own show.
Yeah, I had to. I mean, I wanted to. I wasn't a follower or anything like that. I thought of certain things in a different way, and I thought that's the way it is for me. I'm not going to follow anybody else because they think that way. That's not who I am. And I stayed true to myself, and I was right. Whatever I said over there came true. Everything.
Scary. You wish it didn't.
Kaepernick. Yeah.
Yeah, give me an example. Give me something, an example. Like, what did you say about Kaepernick? It then came so.
I said I jumped in the owner's shoes. When everybody was talking about, Colin Kaepernick, former NFL quarterback, San Francisco 49ers, they were talking about why wouldn't he get a job with the NFL? How come the teams are not picking him up? I said, well, I jumped in the owner's shoes. I say, well, if you have a guy with all this baggage, do you want that on your team as an owner to potentially alienate the fan base? So as an owner, I said, I wouldn't want him on my team. We're playing football. You're going to bring all that to my organization. It's going to alienate the fan base. No, the team only exists to make money. And I said that. I said, he's not going to play again because no owner is going to want that on their team. And that was true. Until, then it was good business to reach out to him based on what happened with the George Floyd. So after that, then it was good business to try to bring him back into the NFL. But I said he would never play again, and he didn't.
And isn't that shameless? They don't care about anybody. It is just business. So they're like, okay, right. this is popular now. This isn't popular now. And isn't that how most people on the left are with these opinions? It's not their opinion. It's just what will make me popular now. What will make me a good guy now?
Right. It's all fake. It's all fake. This guy, Joe Biden, it's racial identity politics. It's like the reason why I'm picking you is because you're black. The reason why I'm picking you is because you're a trans. But I thought Martin Luther King wanted to get away from that. I thought he wanted to, deal with the content of a person's character. So it's all bullshit to me. It's all like, not cool.
Yeah, and you bring up the Reverend Martin Luther King. I had to do accounting today, which is my least favorite thing. My accountant gave me an Excel sheet and said, fix this. And so I put on speeches just rolling on the background on YouTube, and I had Martin Luther King, and it was actually an interview. And I think he was quoting James Baldwin. He said, we don't want to burn America down. Why would we want equality in something we're burning down? We want America to be great. We want to be equal in a place that's great. And from the left today, we see division, not a real concern for equality, just a desire to burn it down. And isn't that what Antifa said last week in Portland? We don't want Biden. We want revenge. They want to burn it down. They don't want equality. They don't care about, like, what your show highlights is family and neighborhood and community, the things we love. We want, we want my kids right now, as I'm talking to you, they're riding their bikes around the house. And my 7-year-old turned his bedroom window into a drive-through restaurant. And then the kids in the neighborhood are riding through asking for water and lemonade or whatever. Isn't this what we want in every neighborhood? Isn't this the goal? What, I don't know. I don't know what they want.
I think Antifa, no matter who won, their job is to try to collapse American society. They don't care about Biden or Trump. Their job, they've been here, I guess, 20 years, just like Yuri Bezmenov said, and they get into these organizations, BLM. They infiltrate them, and they destroy and create chaos in the name of these things to exacerbate America's history problems with race. You'll see whenever something happens, Antifa, they're going to get in and they're going to just create crisis and chaos with the intent of collapsing the society. That's the point that they're there. That's my opinion. That's what I think. Because Black Lives Matter, they're not the real organization. They're not out there to destroy. They're not. But if you're going to get in and infiltrate Black Lives Matter, you can do it and run away and cause destruction with the intent of collapsing this society. I think that's it. That's why they were talking about subversion of America with all the confusion. It's so true. And then, you know, they had a guy, Donald Trump, former president, who was very patriotic. And if you remember what Yuri said, that's the way you combat this. You have to have a love of your country, a love of, you know, patriotism. And they had that guy who was America first and trying to put that up, and they threw this guy away like it's over. So now, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, I was at that January 6th event, you know, and to see how the media is representing, it's unbelievable. And I was a guy, and I don't know if you know, I was almost a never Trumper. I didn't endorse him. Yeah. I didn't like him. I believed a lot of what I heard about him. Didn't get what he was about. And I'm embarrassed to say I probably really didn't get what he was about until that January 6th event. Not because of anything he said, but I looked around at this crowd, hundreds of thousands of people. Mm-hmm. It was, and I hate this word because it's a virtue signaling word, but it's just actually describes the crowd. Incredibly diverse. And
yeah,
I saw rainbow Trump flags. There was one Confederate flag I saw. I don't know who that knucklehead was. But I saw like a dozen rainbow flags. I saw the flags of South Vietnam as far as the eye could see. The speakers list was the most of, I never saw a group with such a strange group of speakers. And I said to myself, who are these people? What do they have in common? Right. And I was walking in the midst of these crowds saying, what do these people, they don't seem to have anything in common. And then it hit me. These folks are the roadkill of history. These folks are the ones, the neoliberals, the establishment on the left and the right, that transcend both political parties, can care less about. The thousands of South Vietnamese I saw with their flags that were destroyed, the Cubans, the Uyghurs with the flags of East Turkestan, gay Republicans who, you know, as a conservative Republican myself, they were never welcomed in the party. Trump really welcomed them and didn't think twice, didn't judge him, didn't care. He's an old school New York businessman who's like, I'm for you. You know, we're a team, whatever. And so I was like, wow, I need to respect these people's opinions on Donald Trump. They really know. And that's why they're so loyal, because he was loyal to them when no one else really, people would virtue signal when it was time to put him on stage to get some votes. They would do that. But when it came to someone that really respected them, it was the first person in any position of power ever was Donald Trump.
Yeah. And, you know, the media went after him from day one. and they told people to hate this guy. And man, 40,000 people at his rallies, everywhere he went, 30,000. The other guy couldn't draw like 10 or 15 people. So it was like, it's just crazy that, you know, he got demonized and basically criminalized. And I don't know what's going to happen next, but the writing is kind of on the wall with this stuff. I think, you know, maybe this might morph into socialism. You know, seems like this dude is compromised with foreign nations. And they just buried that stuff. It just, once he won and they put him in, I was like, oh man, this is not going to be good.
Yeah, but you know what though? But here's why I think it's going to be. I mean, I have to be hopeful. I have 7 kids, 2 grandkids.
Right.
And but you give me hope. Let me tell you something that happened yesterday that really just blew my mind. I went to the boxing gym, and it's in the barrio. I mean, I love it. I just get hungry driving through this neighborhood because there's these little taco stands and Mexican restaurants everywhere. And this boxing gym is, I don't even know if in New York City they have gyms like this anymore. This is one of those gyms like every boxing gym was in the 70s. Old school.
Oh, okay.
Homeless guy holding mitts, you know, young kids. From, you know, illegal immigrant kids, hardworking kids, all young guys. It's just it's my favorite place in the world to be is this gym. So I'm there, but I'm new to town. I'm a new guy in the gym. And they were kind of gathered around me and they said, hey, you know, where are you from? And I said, Hawaii. I came in from Hawaii. I'm like, you're going backwards. Why would you move to, you know, San Antonio from Hawaii? I said, I picked this neighborhood out of every place on earth because I like the culture and I like the freedom. And that's all. And then all of a sudden, this young black man from Detroit who just moved here just went off on the Democrat Party, went off on socialism, went off. I didn't say anything. He didn't know who I was, knew nothing about me, went off on Biden, started celebrating Trump. And then all the young guys, Mexican kids, Puerto Rican kids, the whole gym just erupted in like, you know, talking about socialism and destroying America and the Second Amendment and freedom of speech and cancel culture. And these are young guys that work the night shift at Home Depot so they can box during the day because they got a fight coming up in 8 weeks. Some of them, I'm sure, are illegal or dreamers. And I'm like, they know what's what. And then I listen to your show and I think America is waking up. And I think this election was stolen. I really do. And it had to have been, and they don't, and they don't tell the truth about the increase in support for Trump from Latinos, from blacks, from all across America, every demographic. And it's not that they love Trump. They like freedom.
Exactly. Freedom. And some of these people come from these other places where, you know, the freedom, they don't have freedom. You know what I'm saying? So you get to America, and then you see America starting to change. Of course, you feel alarmed. But when they censored the president, and when they blocked the president, and when they, you know, block tweets and start to dictate what you can say, what does that remind you of? You know what I'm saying? That's what seems like we're going into. And, man, I just don't like that. I think it's freedom of speech. This is our country. This is a free country. And for these big tech to start, you know, authorizing thoughts and everything. That's
you
not
heard
what it's about.
This bird watching from Twitter. I'm gone from Twitter. Thanks be to God. Did you hear about this bird watching?
No, I left Twitter a long time ago.
They have this new program they just announced this week. It's called bird watching. Do you know what bird watching is?
No.
You snoop and spy and report on your friends for saying unapproved things.
China. That's how they do it in China. That's how they got started, where you start snitching on your neighbors. You can see it with everything. You see it.
This is why I got off Twitter.
People don't understand. People don't understand what is actually happening. You have to be about freedom. You cannot be an American and be okay with that because you're complicit with the overhaul of the society. You can't be complicit with that. You have to say it's freedom of speech. I may not like what this dude is saying, but he has a right to say it, and I'm gonna stand for his right. That's America. That's what it is. So you have to be in that vein of patriotism as far as freedom of speech, all that stuff, man. We can't be anything else. Then it's going to be, like he said, there's no other place to defect to. This is the last bastion.
Even people we disagree with have things that I want to hear that are worth hearing and I can learn from, even if it's just empathy for their perspective.
Yeah, and, you know, they talk a lot about diversity, but for them, diversity is not diversity in thought. It's not thinking. It's racial and gender identity politics. So for diversity, oh, we'll get this black person or we'll get this trans. But is it really diversity if all of them think the same? You got to have diversity in thought so you could come to better solutions with different ideas and different ways of going about things. But they don't think about it like that. You know, it's like some racism, too, like hidden underneath. Crazy, man.
Well, you know, when I spoke at this event on January 5th in Washington, D.C., there was a trans speaker, there was gay mm-hmm. speaker, there was, I might have been, I mean, I, at least in my slate, I might have been the only white speaker. The guy that introduced me was Ali Alexander. I was actually being sent hateful emails from weirdos on the right that I shouldn't speak at an event with these different people. I said, listen, I'm standing with anyone for freedom. Anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But they are using these people to create division. And I think what's beautiful is the cancel culture is putting all of the noble souls on the same side. They might have different political opinions, but the truth is they have the same sort of soul, a respect and a love for other people to just let them be. I'm a Christian conservative that believes marriage is from a man and a woman. Let me be, you know, let them be. Don't hurt people. Don't dox people. Don't destroy people. Don't use people.
They'll block you. You have to get off. They took away Parler, just like that.
Boom.
This is China. This is how they do in China, man. This is like, you know, once you start talking against the party, and it's one party, which is what they're trying to do here, it seems like. One party group, once you say something opposite of that, shut down. You have no ability to voice your opinion. I don't like that. That's why I had to try to develop my own platform. You have to do that because, you know, it's their platform, their rule, but I don't have to participate.
Now, I want to talk about you for a minute. So you're from New York City. You had this podcast. You know, it was really about culture and sports. I think it started out really just a lot about basketball.
Yeah.
And then it becomes sort of politicized. Did you consider yourself, what was your inciting incident where you said, I have to talk about politics? I have to talk. What was the first thing where you knew this is a line in the sand and I got to draw the line in the sand right here?
Once I never brought up the politics. Right. And but then I started to research and I started reading Thomas Sowell. And then it changed my perspective. And then I saw it not from the media's point of view, which is I was like mixed up and intertwined with the media. Once I took myself out of their viewpoint and I started reading, it changed my perspective. And then I saw what the media was doing as far as manipulating people's minds. And then it had me as a black American always in the victim spot. And I didn't like that. So what I examined, why was I always a Democrat? Like without even thinking, when I was younger, I was like, why? And I researched and I said, oh, I'm not going to be this. No, so I'm just going to be in the middle. I'm just going to be in the middle and I'm going to judge both of these guys. So that's what I did. And once I became independent, then the hatred came because I'm not viewing the company line, especially as a black American. So if I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a liberal, and I'm just an independent, and I'm trying to be objective and fair. But my ire was against the media because they manipulate the public. And I said, the media is the enemy of the American people. I said this. Once that happened, then I could accurately see how they were treating Donald Trump. So if you're not you know, going at Donald Trump saying you hate this guy, then people are going to look at you, especially as a black person, as, yo, some, like, you get called names. So I was getting called names, but I knew I was right. So I cut the TV off and I just started to think for myself, and it's helped me tremendously. So I could see things as they are.
What year was that that you read, like when you started reading Thomas Sowell? Was it you just read his newspaper column, or did you want to critique him? Like, were you like, man, this guy's crazy, let me read what he's saying so I can refute it? Or did someone you respect say, hey, you should read this book?
Well, I was arguing. My brother, I was in the airport, my brother called me, and I was arguing against what he was talking about. And then, because he was talking about Thomas Sowell and how the media manipulates, and then I was arguing against him. And then I went and read the literature myself. And then I said, oh man, I was misled. I was, you know, it just totally changed me, because what he was saying was absolutely correct. And I read, white, black liberals or something, white rednecks or something, like black rednecks, white liberals, something like that. And it kind of changed my perspective. And it's actually the best thing that happened to me as far as my thinking. It was the best thing. And you know, a lot of stuff I based on that, and it was right. I was right.
Well, when you read Thomas Sowell, like, I didn't grow up in a politicized family, but I grew up in a neighborhood where most of my closest friends were black, and I got a lot of my values from them. So I kind of always think, like, what I'm expressing, people call, especially when I was in the Army or in college, they were just kind of the values that I saw around me of the families I respected. And then all of a sudden I'm being called racist for it, and I'm confused. But when you read Thomas Sowell, you realize what you're discovering is what were your values. No, this is what I really think, always, anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, I connected it to my family, who are from South Carolina, and it kind of made sense. You know, a lot of people were Republicans in the 40s and 50s, the black folks, and conservative in nature. And I just didn't realize that, because I had been taught the total opposite, but I had been put there as their victim. As the Democrats and the liberals, they use, like he said, and Malcolm X said this in 1963, they use black people as pawn, you know, to put them or us out front to get their agenda. So it's like you're being used. Malcolm X called it the political football that they kick around during, you know, election time. And that made me realize, like, this is true. This is what they do. This is part of it. You know, and they're doing that now with the trans community, putting them out front, using them. It's all the same, man.
You know, and what Trump did was he grabbed that football and he kicked it into the stands.
Right.
He said, no, you know, boom.
We're all Americans. There's no singling out. It's like, yo, this, we're all this. That's how I look at it.
You know, that's what I was at the RNC. Actually, I had a big donor who wanted to meet Milo. Remember that guy, Milo, that they destroyed, doxed and destroyed, because he awkwardly expressed what it was like to be a young man and be sexually abused. So they use that to destroy them. That's how loving they are. Really, to me, the worst thing I've ever seen in my life is what they did to this young man. So, but I had this donor where they were ethnically Chinese, and they were from Hong Kong, and they would love Milo. So I asked Steve Bannon, who's a friend of mine. I said, Steve, can you get me tickets to this Milo party at the RNC? And so I was there with Steve, kind of feeling uncomfortable, you know, and they're with these my friends who are older and they're Chinese, and Steve, and I, and Steve said, so are you on the team yet? And Trump was the one, you know, and I said, the nominee? I said, no, I'm not on the team. I mean, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to sit this one out. I got other things to do. I got movies to make. And he goes, well, what's your problem with Trump? I said, well, you know, I think he is, I said, I don't think he's racist. I think he might hold to the ideas of race that his age group hold to. You know, I said, but I just don't think he's really a conservative. And Bannon looked at me and goes, oh, he's not a conservative. He's a nationalist. And I said, what do you mean by nationalist? He goes, he loves Americans that have been left out. He's fighting for the working class guy, the white guy, the black guy. He doesn't see that. He sees people right. that have been left out, that we have just blown past and don't care about, the people Hillary calls deplorables. Remember, Hillary gave him that name, deplorables. He goes to Trump. These aren't deplorable people. Trump grew up admiring them, watching them work for him, walking through the city, seeing them go to do. He's like, he loves these people, and he thinks no one's fighting for them. And it really took me 4 years to see what Steve Bannon said that day. This was just a guy who wanted to fight for the people. How did you put it? Just the what was the word you said something that made me think about this. Just working class Americans that have been, you know, kicked it aside, being used.
Right.
They're a political football. They pretend to care about them, but at the end of the day, they do not care about them at all.
Absolutely. And they show it all the time. It's just theater. It's just a lot of theater, and just sad to see, but that's what they do, man. They've been doing it for a long time.
Now, did you ever think, cause you didn't even go to the right. You're like, I'm just going to be fair. And you start getting flack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you ever think, like, I'm done? I'm not going to even – I'll just talk about basketball and music? Did you ever think that for a minute?
No. I never thought about that. I said, you know, I'm a stand on my convictions. Like, I'm an individual. I shouldn't think like everybody else, and you shouldn't think like me. And I'm not demanding that anybody thinks like me. This is just put out there. So you could, maybe it could, you know – spark your thought, maybe to change your thoughts, but I don't demand anyone thinks like me. It's just like, have you ever thought about this? But people react to that with anger and rage, but that's them. I just, you know, I have a different point of view on things. I'm not embedded in television. That broadcaster cannot dictate how I see something. It has to come from me. So when you ask me, what do you think? You're going to get what I think. Not regurgitated from the broadcaster. And people can't understand that. So when they ask me on my cookout, you know, that we do every night, what I think, you really get what I think. And sometimes it seems far-fetched because it's original thought and you haven't heard it before. So when they get it, it seems far-fetched, but it's always in the ballpark, always.
But they don't. It seems like somehow you have avoided being like canceled and doxxed. Like I watch the feeds, and I mean, do you ever get hate email or?
No, not too much. It's just, you know, I think people have stopped because I've been right so many times. I think people now they don't know what to think, but they just don't want to dismiss what I'm saying, even though it might sound totally unusual, but since I've been right so many times about all things, you know, I think people realize, like, this is his thought, and it may be right. This is not what I've heard on the radio, that all the TV, that everybody else is just regurgitating. This is something different. And especially coming from, you know, the background of researching what's going on, you know, with this Black Lives Matter stuff, they want you to think that it's white Americans against Black Americans. But if you really understand subversion and what they're trying to do to American society, you see deeper. You see people tearing down statues, right? Is that Black Lives Matter? Tearing down statues, trying to make Americans
Frederick Douglass?
Hate their country.
You know, tearing down Frederick Douglass and Martin and Abraham Lincoln. What?
Exactly. So when you see it deeper than the appearance, because they want to manipulate the Americans and think whites are going against blacks, but it's Antifa and anarchists and Marxists in that BLM and all these other things to exacerbate the historical racial problems in America and to collapse the society. That's the point of this thing. Every way you see, it's going to be violent. It's not going to stop because Biden got in the plan is to make Americans hate one another and have the military in the streets firing at the citizens. Society broken down. I'm telling you, this is what they're trying to do, man.
That's, you know, that's why I eventually, two things. The reason I got rid of Twitter, I asked myself something. I said, would Malcolm X be deplatformed from Twitter? If Twitter was around, he would have been, would Martin Luther King have been deplatformed?
Without a doubt.
Hannah Arendt.
Without a doubt.
The most beautiful thinkers in our country's last 100 years, if Twitter was around then, would have been gone. They would have been canceled, doxed. They're trying to cancel them now, and they've been dead.
Right, right. You can't even quote something that isn't what they want. You can't even quote it. It's going to be blocked, and you won't be able to share it. What kind of, I don't know, and these are Americans that run these sites, and you're okay with that? These people have to be compromised. They have to be working arm in arm on behalf of, I think, the People's Liberation Army of China. I think they have to be down with them to do this type of stuff. I think gently persuade and make the American hate their freedoms or think that they have too much freedom, and then you'll welcome different things coming in. You have to be like I say on the cookout every night, this is a free society. I'm not with any restricting anything. That's all I know. You try to do anything else, we're going to have a fight. And other people are like, oh, we need lockdowns, we need this and that. You can't be like that. You can't. What's coming next? Now they said you got to have two masks now.
You know, I had to get a COVID test yesterday. So I went in and the doctor said to me, I said, you know, I said, they asked me why I was there. And I said, I told him why. And I had to go meet with someone that's vulnerable. And I said, yeah, and I don't wear my mask. He goes, well, good. You know, you might as well put a lucky, he said, you should have a lucky rabbit foot. That would do you more good than a mask. That's what he said. A doctor. And every doctor in my life has said this to me. If he were to say it on YouTube, he would be nuked and destroyed.
Right, right. To quote Yuri Bezmenov, to alter the perception of reality in the American, to make him doubt himself or herself. That is the key. Mask, I mean, it's ridiculous when you really understand biology and nature and science and breathing. We breathe out carbon, you inhale oxygen, and I see a lot of people working out with masks on, not understanding, which is unbelievable to me, that you could be working out with a mask on, restricting oxygen as you exert yourself, and the blood needs more oxygen because you're exerting yourself, so you could actually be increasing the likelihood of you catching a stroke or a heart attack. These people are crazy, man.
No, I notice they're not telling us to take vitamin C or zinc or vitamin D. They're not encouraging us to do these things. They're not mandating that we do these things that are actually pretty good to do. It's right. Cover your face. A friend of mine made a good point. She said, think of all the babies that were born in March. They walk into a world with these weird monsters with no mouths or noses gawking at them all the time. You know, these children need to see smiles. They need to be comforted, and they need to see the world as lovely and be attracted to other human beings and be excited to be in this world because they're crapping themselves. They have gas. They don't speak the language, and they're confused. They need constant reinforcement. But instead, they're walking around, and there's these, like, weird creatures with no mouths staring at them.
And the media manipulate with fear and racism. They need you to be fearful because you won't make rational decisions. So it's all about fear. That's what it is. So they understand it. And I like I say, who elected these guys to tell me anything? You know, who elected you? Why are you an authority? Well, why should I listen? So I try to use my own brain and my own knowledge to figure it out. And once you use a reasonable deduction and critical thinking, you can always figure out the lie. You can always see it.
Now, you hit the nail on the head. And this is what I think your show does so well. That's why they can't really dox you. They're trying to divide us.
Yeah.
And the key thing they're trying to divide us around is race.
Mm-hmm.
And that miss Latinos a little bit. We never talk about the Indians. And I call them Indians because my Indian friends say we're Indians, Indios, godlike people. That's what they meant. This India thing is nonsense. We're Indians. They don't want you to call us godlike people. We're Indians. Indios.
Right.
So we don't talk about that ever. They have to be sitting there going, they're talking about trans now. When do we show up in the conversation? like we're talking 127 genders. And we haven't even come up yet. I mean, they bring us up for baseball teams' names. That's cute. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
When do we come up? You don't you? Right?
When? But think about this. One of the first things of order of the new president was an executive order to have biologically born males fight and participate in women's sports. That was an executive order. Think about that. So you got men who say they're women just by saying they're women, and they will participate in women's sports. He made that law, basically. You can't discriminate. Think about that. If that doesn't tell you what's on the horizon, because as a president coming in, why is that one of the first things, points of order? With so much other stuff going on, that priority.
Suicides, epidemic youth suicides.
Women's sports.
Epidemic youth suicides because of these shutdowns. The first thing they do is a 14-year-old boy can do a double leg takedown to your daughter, smash her face into the mat at the local high school wrestling meet.
I don't get it. And then I heard, I don't know how true this is, they want to, you know, make a legal aliens legal. I don't know, why would that be of such importance when you basically have tortured the American citizens by locking it down, telling them they can't go to work, you can open your restaurant, but only on the sidewalk, now close it again, and...
They can be inside, but only if you make a tent on the outside, you can put them inside the tent.
As if the COVID wouldn't be in the tent. It defeats the purpose of outdoor dining. If you allow me or make me make a concoction outside, oh, then people can go in there, but we can't go in the actual restaurant. It's all about confusion. Keep you in a state of confusion. That's it.
So here's the key. Here's where I am hopeful. The goal is division.
Yep.
So then we know what our job is. Unity.
Absolutely. That's how you combat. Unity and freedom.
So how do we... So I was talking to my wife like 2 years ago, and someone had called me a racist who didn't know me for something I had said or posted, or I think I just said I was pro-life. And they go, that's because you're white and you're racist. And I said to my wife, you know, They throw this word race. They can never. That doesn't work on me because since the day I was born, all my friends were black, and my kids are mixed. And it's a weird thing. I said, but I think they use it because it works. Because all these white people who, you shouldn't feel like you're racist if you're from Idaho in a town where you don't have black friends. Like, of course you don't have black friends. How would you have a black friend? If you have a black friend, I think you're probably racist, and you had to go find one, and that's creepy.
Right.
So, and my wife said, well, my wife's Chinese, but she's from Riverdale. And then she moved to Bronxville. And she said, you know, I had a friend who was 1/8 black. And I'm like, 1/8? How did that happen? Like, in our generation, like, that's, I don't even know about that anymore. So I wouldn't want to be, I go, you're not even white and you're afraid of being called racist.
Damn.
So how do we... All these white people are walking around that have never had a malevolent thought in their life about anyone. And they're the ones that are causing us to suffer because they will jump on any, you tell them to do anything to prove they are not racist. They will do it.
Right. Right. There's a lot of guilt. I would think the way to combat that is, you know, you don't even look at people as race. That's silly. Human beings. That's it. That's how you get out of that race. I don't even look at people like that. We all want the same thing. You want your family to be good. You want in health. So to have a better living experience, you have to see others as just human beings. That's it. It's very simple. It's a better living experience. But when you start differentiating, well, this is, he acts a certain way because his skin tone is this way. That's ridiculous. So I don't assume white folks are racist, and I could care less if you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter to me. You don't. There's not a law saying that you have to like everybody or whatever. But my thing is, I just look at all people as human beings and whatever, you know, and that's how I keep myself together. And it's a better living experience.
You know, I had to learn that in Hawaii when as a young man, when people would say, oh, I hate Howleys, I'd say, okay, cool.
Right, exactly.
All right. You probably got your reasons.
You don't have to like me.
You probably got your reasons. Okay, whatever.
Right. You don't have to like me. I'm not here to be accepted by you. So I don't care whether you like me or not. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, and if that's why you don't like me, praise God, because there's a lot of better reasons not to like me I don't want you to know about.
Right, right.
So let it be something superficial, God forbid, except because there are things about my personality and character that are probably very good grounds for not liking me. And if,
right.
But if that's what you're picking not to like me, thanks be to God. That's a good thing, right?
And you know, the celebrities sometimes, when certain things come happen with police and, you know, situation with a perpetrator or whatever, victim, the celebrity will come out and say, you know, black cops are hunting black folks. I think it's very irresponsible for a person to say that, especially a celebrity. And I'm walking around. I'm out here all night. I go by a lot of cops all the time. I'm night, you know, all over the place, New York, Brooklyn, Harlem, whatever. I don't worry about the police officers. That's what I say. They're not hunting people. So for somebody to say that, it's very irresponsible to say something like that.
I've seen you make that point time and time and time again. Like, this is not true. If it's not true, we shouldn't say it, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's not true, there are things that are true that we, now there's two, and I can hear some of my liberal listeners are like, well, you know, but if you're in positions of power and you're racist, it matters. And that's true. Mm-hmm. But I think the three places that's been most expressed in our lifetime, and a lot of my conservative friends disagree with me on the last two. I'll give you the first one and then the last two. But one is just abortion. Abortion, the way that abortion policy has played itself out in this country, is genocide. That seems to me self-evident. We're not allowed to say that. Number two, I think the Dream Act, I support protecting the Dreamers because I think our immigration policy was broken by design, where we lured people in to exploit, and their children are really Americans. They've been here.
Yeah.
They went on dates with us. They ate cereal and watched Scooby-Doo like us. They,
right,
you know,
right,
they went to school with us, and we need to make, they're Americans. In fact, they should be Americans in law. And then the third area where I really think people in power who are racist or thoughtless to consequences was the drug war. And
that was terrible. Yeah, Joe Biden spearheaded
that. By the way, Joe Biden's drug war. Yeah, exactly. So I do think there are things we should be doing. Like, I support a block grants to rehabilitate communities that were really destroyed by you know, the specific communities. Like, you can go onto a map of Chicago, Detroit, New York, and say from this block to this block to this block, the drug war utterly nuked, and we need to revitalize these communities and take care of those people who suffered because of our policy, not because of something our great grandpa did or happened to 150 or before my ancestors even came to this country. No, something that happened in our lifetime that people alive today are victims from. So, I mean,
absolutely.
But we don't deal with those real things, right? We don't deal with the, we got Kamala, we got the drug warriors in there.
Exactly. Joe Biden and you know, Kamala, they could right the wrong, especially Joe Biden. He could easily, you know, stand out there and say, listen, I was wrong. You know, we, all of us was wrong. We participated in this thing and, you know, we caused great damage to this particular community. So what we want to do is reverse that if we can. And we're going to do the opposite of what we did, because as a result of those draconian, you know, laws, you know, we decimated those communities. So now, me being the president, I need to make this right for my conscience. We don't hear that. We hear, oh, look, we got a trend, and it's all about diversity. You see?
Yeah, he's going to undo the wrongs of history, of all of history, unnameable, uncountable people, just history. He'll right those wrongs, but he won't say, you know, which I believe that most of the folks that advocated those drug policies wanted what was best for those communities and for everyone. Oops, right. It didn't work. It didn't work. Say we were wrong, and it had unintended consequences that hurt real people, decimated real families and neighborhoods, and that was never our intent. But they don't have that kind of humility to say that.
Nah, I don't know. Yeah, you should. You should want to. I mean, you should do that. I don't get. I would want to do that. You know.
Well, let's be hopeful. I am hopeful that, with this administration, that the two things I'm really hopeful for is that, and I have no grounds for this hope. I have hope without a cause, but I do have hope that they will continue the leadership of the Trump administration on pressuring China to free the 3 million Uyghurs in concentration camps, having their organs harvested. Seems like something we can all agree on. That should happen. Nike and, you know, how is it that guys wearing Nike shoes made by slaves are taking knees? You know, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Right.
It's so weird.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope it's ignorance. I hope it's ignorance that they just have no clue, but I think that's something Nike, Apple, and Biden should lead the way on. And because Nike and Apple are the greatest, they're the most culpable in the crimes of the CCP against the Uyghur. They should say, oh, wow, we didn't really know. We're figuring this out. Well, let's make this right. And I am hoping they're not shameless and everything is trans story hour. And then these children, the dreamers, are still left in limbo. I mean, I hope, will they kick that football? That, and it's just a political football to them. Will that football go through the goalpost? You think they'll lead on that or no? It'll just be.
But no, I don't think so. Here's why. Because if I'm in bed, so to speak, with China, and they've given my family money and given my son billions of dollars, then I have no right to say anything. You understand that? I think that's how it works. You have no right to say anything because you know what we've done for you and your family, which is the reason why we gave you the money. Compromise. This is why when the NBA, when that general manager for the Houston Rockets, Daryl Morey, said something about Hong Kong and their fight for democracy, the NBA told Daryl Morey to shut up. Don't say anything about China. Remember, LeBron James said, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. When you compromise and you're in the back pocket of these guys, you have to acquiesce and do what they want, which is why it was very odd to me that a lot of these governors of these democratic cities were anti-freedom, locking down their own constituents. There's a lot of homelessness out here, a lot of crime in New York City, and these dudes was just anti-freedom. Ridiculous stuff that didn't make sense. And I was like, and then I heard Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, he made a speech, and he was talking to all the governors of all the states. And he said the Chinese did researched all the 50 governors, and Mike Pompeo said they know you guys by first name, and they know who's, you know, eager to play ball. So I just want to let you know, he was telling these guys, I just want to let you know they are here and, you know, seems like some of you guys are compromised. We want to let you know their intention. And when I saw these guys locking it down, and I said, oh, my God, it kind of looks like that. And the other states weren't locking down. Florida, Texas, everything was good. Everything was good. People were working, going out. Said, oh, these guys might be in the back pocket.
You know, that was in the boxing gym yesterday. That's what the guy, young men knew. These young men knew. They said, listen, they just want to control us. I'm going to have this young boxer on my show. He was like, they want you to depend on them for food. They want your guns. They don't want to get rid of the police because if you don't have a gun and there's no police, then you are just perpetually scared. They want you dependent and scared to death. That's what they want.
Exactly. And that Antifa going at the cops hard, writing graffiti, F the pig, all over, and delivering food. In the Bronx over here, I woke up this morning and I saw that they delivered 3 bags of food in front of my door. I'm like, man, what the hell? They don't want you to be
who delivered you
entrepreneurial.
Food? Who delivered you food?
I don't know what it is. So they just saying, are we, we're going to deliver food to the New Yorkers, or, but I don't know. I just see it on door. It comes every day.
This is strange.
They're not letting people go to work. You know what I'm saying? So you're forcing people to be unemployed. Man, I never thought that the governors would be eager for this. I would think the government, you wouldn't torture the citizens. Like certain governors in certain states, Republican states, they're like, yo, we're not doing this. We're not torturing these citizens. They got to work. We got to keep this thing going, which is what Donald Trump was saying.
I'm in Texas. Like, it's wide open. I go to chain stores. I mean, I'm not going to say them. Employees aren't wearing masks.
Right.
You know, so, employees aren't wearing masks. I walk into any store not wearing a mask. I started wearing a mask about a week ago because I walked into IKEA. And I walked up to this gentleman that worked there, about 50 years old, not even thinking, because it's Texas, I don't wear a mask. And I handed him my phone. I said, sir, I'm looking for the shelf. You know where I can find the shelf? He was shaking like I had a gun in his face.
They got him.
He was shaking. And I said to myself, I just wanted a shelf. And I terrorized a man. Like I said, I know it's BS. I said, but you know what? I'm just going to, when I go into these type of stores now, if it's only 1 in 25 people that I horrified, it's too many people. Even though it's right. BS, I don't know if that's the right decision or wrong decision. I just don't want to scare people to death. And this poor guy's been brainwashed.
Right. I do it out of respect. I'm not one of these guys that's going to fight and all that stuff. I do it out of respect because I know you're frightened to death, right? So I just do it out of respect because I don't want any issues, and I understand. Everybody can't be like us. The media has people in the palm of their hands, and they tell them what to do. This is how it is.
Yeah, and it's sad. Now, I want to end on this. Anything that you want to conclude with, but what I would like to ask you is, when you have someone DM you and they say, G. Moody, I love you. I've been following you for a long time, but you have lost your mind. Like, what do you sell? What do you say to them? Do you give them a book to read? Like, what do you do? What's your strategy with that? Because I know you must get that a lot.
I used to get it a lot, I deal with them in the past because I don't get it as much anymore. I deal with them like whenever they're talking about that they are saying I've lost my mind, I try to give them something that they can read. So I said, you got to have an open mind. You got to open up your mind. You don't know everything. I don't know everything. But some things we've been told kind of shape how we view things. So you have to just open it up and come to your own realization and conclusion on a topic. So when people talk to you, they could get your original thought, not what Don Lemon said, not what these other guys say. You, what do you think about it? So I said, that's what you hear from me. You asked me what I thought and you got it. And it may not jive with what you thought. So maybe you should come back with some scholarship to meet me halfway. That's what I do. I always tell them like that. I don't, even though if they come at me sideways, I always have my discourse with respect, and it always disarms them. Always. Because they're looking for an argument, but I'm not here to argue.
Because you want the truth and you actually care about people. And
exactly.
And you, like you said, Don Lemon isn't giving you Don Lemon's opinions. We don't know. Don Lemon doesn't even know what Don Lemon thinks.
Exactly. Production meeting. They tell him he's a marionette. He's a puppet. They tell him what to say. It's like a performance. He's one of the best liars out there.
But maybe he doesn't even know he's lying. You know, my favorite political philosopher, this young Jewish woman, escaped the Nazis, came to America, became a great political philosopher. Hannah Arendt was a New Yorker. She wrote for the New Yorker. She wrote a very controversial essay at the time called Eichmann in Jerusalem, which she would most definitely have been kicked off Twitter for tweeting. And what she said was, Eichmann was not a monster. He was pathetic. He was banal. He just wanted to be the best employee in the world. So his job was to make the trains run. He made the trains run. He just wanted to make his bosses happy. He wanted people to be impressed with him. That's as far as his thinking went. Will my boss smile at me when I give him the report? And I think that's what most of this chaos, the people at Twitter, they're not Bolsheviks or Khmer Rouge. They just want to be promoted. They just want their boss to smile at them. They want to fit in. What you went through, that unique courage that you had when you're like, huh, maybe I'm being gaslit here. Most people, when they get that, they ignore it. They go, I'm never going to look in the direction of that thought again, move along to get along.
Yeah, they cave in. No, I couldn't do that. I wanted to get it out because that's what I felt. And I like it. It's good to think outside the box and to give people a alternative. Like, it may be this way, you know? And I said, all of a sudden, I said, isn't this unique? All of a sudden, they all started hating this guy, Donald Trump. But prior to that, I've never heard anybody talk about this guy too much. When he was on The Apprentice or anything, like, yo, I got to watch that show. They take pictures with this guy.
Oprah loved him. Oprah made him like one of her five most important people of the 20th century guests.
Exactly. And all these hip-hop guys immortalized this racist in their song. So when did you know he was a racist? When you was writing the rap song? See, this is the thing I don't understand. So once I saw, I said, oh, they clicked on the switch and they made people hate this dude. Hate him. I said, I don't know this dude personally. You know, I don't know his family. I've never met him. So if you ask me, do I hate him? I don't know him. I don't know him to hate him. We're talking about governance and policy. So if you don't like his policies or governance, that's fine. But man, it was hatred for this guy, man.
And you know what? When he was at the top of his game, they would have done anything he asked.
Right.
Anything. And let me tell you something, Jimudi. I don't know if I told you the story before. I met with Trump in 2012. He wanted to meet with me. They flew me from L.A. where I was living to 2011 to New York City. Met him at the Palm 2 in the back room. He was set up like the Godfather, had this big table. He had some consultants, and then he had the rest of us. They were basically interviewing political consultants. And they wanted to talk to me about my work. You know, I do political campaign consulting. So I went just to tell him that I would fight him tooth and nail if he ever decided to run for president and why. That's why I went. I had no interest in working for him. And I sat across from President Trump before he was president. And I said, I will never work for you, but I'm coming here to tell you as a man, out of some respect for you, you shouldn't run for president because you'll never win. This is what I told him.
Damn.
I said, you'll never win because you're not pro-life. You can never win the Republican nomination. And he said, well, how can you be so sure of that? I said, because I'll stop you. That's what I said.
Wow.
I said, I'll get you in Iowa. I'll get you in the Carolinas. I said, you're not getting through the primary. And he goes, I have pro-life people around me. And they say I can win. I said, would you hire somebody? Would you hire a dairy industry lobbyist to work for you if your policies would undermine the dairy industry? What would you think of those kind of people? So anyone who tells you they're pro-life, that they're working for you, fire them. And he shrugged and he said, you know, he didn't shake my hand. I don't know. I heard he did, but I don't know. I don't remember if I tried to shake his hand, but he pointed to the table. I don't know if you've ever been to the Palm 2. It's a great restaurant. Like, I don't know how someone like me could say, but I had a nice steak and I went home and that was that. But I guarantee you all those people who were kicking him when he was down, kicking him when it was cool, when he was at the top of his game, before he gave more money to historical black colleges than any president ever, before there was lowest black unemployment than anyone ever, where there was really no evidence of the man's heart. But at that point, they would have done anything for the guy.
Anything. Anything. But he won. Now it's over. Now we got this guy. We'll see. Like I said, I give – when you win, as an American, we want you to do what's best. And we want you to do good because, you know, it's for all of us. So I give everybody a clean slate, whether I like you or voted for you or not. Once you win, I'm behind you until you make me see different. That's how I go.
And you know why I have hope? Because you, G. Moody, because people like you, because your show, because the American people, because we still have neighborhoods, we still have families, we still have towns and counties and states, a lot of other we're not just the president. You know, we're not just the executive branch. We're not just the federal government. We're blessed. Our founding fathers, they did, you know, they worked very hard to make sure that tyrants could not do what they're trying to do to us right now. And I think the American people, they long for freedom and they're generally kind and decent, but right now they're scared. They don't want to be doxxed. They don't want to be destroyed. They don't want to be slandered and hated. So they're going along with a lot of nonsense. They got their, you know, their nose, they got punched in the nose and they're scared. But I think as they find their bearings, that we will find who we really are, which is a beautiful people that all the traditions and histories of the world flowed into this place.
Yeah.
To make the most beautiful people in the world. So all the horrible things of the past in the world is part of our past. Because we're the people of the world. All the beautiful things in the world are part of our past. But the difference is that we're a family, unlike any family in any nation in the world. And we love each other. This is still the greatest country in the world, and I think we're going to find out who we are, and we're going to rise to it.
I think so, too. We just have to love the place we live in. Love what it offers. Love the freedom. Don't take it for granted. You know, people still coming here in droves. I don't see a lot of people leaving. They talk about, oh, we hate this place. The cops, this and that. We hate this, this. You never see a mass exodus of people leaving. So that means you really like this place. So I think you should show it. It has a lot to offer.
Well, that's G Moody. That's why I want everyone to follow you on Instagram. You can please tell us what it is, and I'll put it in the show notes, because love the place we live, to me, must be the line of gesture for your podcast. Because that's what I see, that you love the place where you live. If you've never been able to go to New York City, you could go to New York City every night.
Right.
And have a cookout.
Moody's, that's right. G Moody's Cookout is my Instagram handle. It's on 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. It's done outside. No matter the weather, we did it in the snow. So you'll see me sitting in a park with it snowing. And 20-degree weather, we do it. Doesn't matter. We have a good time. And I used to be on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I'm going to have my own platform, G Moody TV, coming to YouTube, or you could subscribe. Just stay tuned for G Moody's Cookout live and direct.
And here's what I know, that you're a pioneer, and there's nothing like your show in the world. Nothing. And it's very unique. And I'm so glad I found it. And so if you guys go listen to it, this show, 30, 40 years from now, we're going to look back, and it's going to be one of the biggest things. And
I
believe that, because what you are doing is, Jacques Ellul, has this great set line. He just said the medium is the message. You use Instagram for what it, to me, Twitter's beyond redemption. All Twitter can do is divide. It needs to die. But Instagram, it can be used in a very beautiful way. And you have found the beautiful way to use Instagram. And as you move to other media platforms and continue to do this, I know, especially if they're successful in closing us down, like people can go to New York. I love New York City. Most people are never going to get the chance to go to New York City. And they can go every night with you. And I think it's going to become a very, very big thing.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Jay. Oh, I forgot to tell you, the podcast, in case you want to listen to it, is called This, That, and the Third with G Moody. It's on all platforms. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, all that good stuff. Google. Check it out. 80, 90 episodes. You can go backwards and listen to them all.
And they're great. It makes me happy when I'm in the road or traveling. I listen to This, That, and the Third. And it makes me very happy. So G Moody, I got advertisers now. I got to do some commercials.
All right, bro.
All right, brother. God bless you.
All right. You too.
Aloha. Bye. All right, everybody, that was Gerald Moody, G. Moody of This, That, and the Third, and G. Moody's Cookout. G gives me hope. It's guys like Gerald Moody who give me hope. His show is amazing. And the American people, I will never place my faith in anyone who is willing to put their name on yard signs and then ask strangers to put the sign in their yard. No, you don't place your faith in men. But I do trust, I really do trust the American people. And I am grateful for our form of government. I think our founding fathers really did their best to outsmart tyrants. And I believe we will succeed because we must. And what do I mean by succeed? We will preserve this republic. I believe we will see a reclamation of belief and freedom. And liberalism as properly understood. I really believe that. And when I say I have faith in the American people, what do I mean by that? This country, all of the traditions of the world, all of them, all of the cultures of the world, flowed here. And it was a big mess. History is a big mess, right? History is a big mess. I'm sitting here in the hill country of Texas, and I think how sorrowful and tragic the slamming together of two cultures that took place here not that long ago. History is a big mess. But out of these broken traditions, and we should not forget the past, right? We must remember the past. We must not idealize it, but we must remember it. And all of these cultures, all of this history flowed right into our polity, right into the United States of America. That's who we are. You know, my grandfather, my wife is Chinese. All of my descendants from now until ever will be Chinese, part Chinese. My grandfather fought the Chinese in Korea. On his deathbed with tears in his eyes, he lamented all, he said all, he was crying, and I asked him if it was for the soldiers that, you know, he told me, now I was crying, actually, and he said, don't cry for me. Cry for all those soldiers that I saw die. And I said, all those American boys, Grandpa, that died in, that you saw die in World War II? Because I was trained never to bring up Korea with my grandfather. It was not allowed. It was not allowed. He said, yes, cry for them, but Korea too. And for all, and then he just looked off into the distance, and he said, and all of those Chinese boys. And then he began to cry. And if you know the history of what Mao did to his own people, how he sent them with no weapons, charging into the most powerful military in the world, ours, very sorrowful. My grandfather, on his deathbed, cried for Chinese boys, never knew, could have never imagined, 1986 is when he passed away. He could have never imagined that he would have, it was unthinkable, right? Just like in 1920, it'd be unthinkable for an Irish family to think that they'd have Italian grandbabies, right? Or in 1951, South Carolina, for a white or black family to think that they're going to have white or black grandkids. That's who we are. We are blessed. We are blessed, and as my children say, Hapa are the best looking. Now they're Hapa, that's Hawaiian for half, so that's what they will say, but they're pretty good looking. We must treasure this republic. We must love our neighbors. We must celebrate freedom, and we must preserve this republic because this is the Ark of Freedom. There's nowhere to go to, guys. There's no place to emigrate. There's no place to flee to be a dissident. No, this is it. So speaking of like courageous people that give you hope, you know, when you have a show with advertisers and you take controversial positions, you stand for things that are controversial, you know your advertisers are going to get in trouble. You know your advertisers are going to want to abandon your podcast. You know they're going to get pressure. This might be the first time in history where my advertiser is more courageous than me, and I'm talking about Mike Lindell of MyPillow. This guy, I think he's running for governor or something, but this guy who made the best pillow in the world. Now, if you're going to make the best something, think about it. If you want to make the best something in the world, making the best pillow in the world would be like right up there with like the best antibiotic, right? The best way to prevent tooth decay. Don't laugh. I don't know if this is true, but I heard half the people in the world have a toothache half their life. Think about that. But the best pillow is like one of the best things to have because it changes your life. Now, my neck and back, I was an infantryman. My hobby is boxing and Brazilian jiu-jitsu and Muay Thai. In Muay Thai, they put you in the, by the way, no one has talked about Muay Thai in a commercial for a pillow ever, except for maybe in Thailand. It's a Thai sport. I love it. I do it every day. It's like kickboxing, but you can clinch. And these big, strong guys, they grab me by my head and they yank me around. And I've been doing this for 30, 40 years now. So I never really used a pillow until my pillow, other than to put over my head. And after a month, my sleep is much better. I sleep so well. I feel rested. And I love it. And here's what you need to know. They won't go flat, but what I do is I can shape it in a way I can never do any other pillow. And I love it. Also, they don't get hot. Now, when I first heard this in other MyPillow commercials, I didn't know what that meant because I'm not one to really sleep on a pillow. But now that I can use this MyPillow because I can mold it to a shape that I like, that's good for my neck, that makes my neck feel better, you know, they don't get hot. They keep their shape. You can wash it. Now, dare I say this? Dare I say this? I'm going to say this because if I don't say it, no one will say it. You wake up and you see toothpaste. You see the toothpaste, right? You drool in your sleep. No one has ever talked about this either. Muay Thai and drooling in your sleep. Don't you put on a pillowcase? Yeah, sometimes a pillowcase comes off in the sleep. If you're like me, tossing and turning. You got to be able to wash the pillowcase. Why would you want a pillow you couldn't wash? At this point, I don't even know. It's barbaric. It's barbaric. If you do not have a MyPillow or you know someone who doesn't, it is time to take advantage of Mike's offer for shows he likes, like mine, the premium MyPillow. And how you're going to do that is you can get a queen size premium MyPillow regularly for $69.98. Can you tell I'm reading now? I got to get these numbers right. You can get that for $29.98. That's a $40 savings. Kings are only $5 more. What are you waiting for? There is a money-back guarantee, and that money-back guarantee lasts till March 1st, okay? Go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Square. There you will find not only this amazing offer, but also deep discounts on other MyPillow products like the Giza Dream Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, the MyPillow Towel Set, or you can call old-timers. Okay, old-timers, you can call 800-876-0708. That's 800-876-0708. And the promo code is Jones. And you have to use the promo code. Because if you don't use the code, I don't get credit. And I have a fragile ego, and I crave like people saying, Jason, good job. You sold a lot of pillows. And if I don't hear that, it hurts my feelings. So you can buy all the pillows you want. If you don't use my code, I have hurt feelings. And this episode, as always, is being brought to you by Movie to Movement. Movie to Movement works to create a culture of life, love, and beauty through the power of film. Go to movietomovement.com where you can click through to the streaming service where our latest movie, Divided Hearts of America, starring Benjamin Watson. And Benjamin does a deep dive on the causes of disunity in our country. This movie has the answers to why we are being divided as a nation. But more importantly, it has a path to how we can become unified, which is what we want. Not for us. For our posterity, for our children, for our grandchildren, right? Okay, go to movietomovement.com. Watch Divided Hearts of America. We're going to have some big news on our movie soon. And that is it. Until next time. Oh, well, I'll tell you later. All right? Until next time. It's the Jason Jones Show.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.